Hi, good afternoon. My name is Sarah Light. As was mentioned, I'm a graduate student at Oregon State University. So to talk briefly about the potato, I think we're most used to thinking about what's underground when we think about potato plants, the part that we eat, the tuber. But I'm going to be talking about the tops of the plants today in this presentation, so I wanted to show a quick picture of what healthy, vibrant potato tops look like. And this is a picture of a potato petiole. Mid-season petiole sampling is a common industry practice for assessing the nutrient needs of the plant throughout the growing season. It's typical to take the fourth or fifth petiole down from the top of the plant. It's thought to be the one that best represents the nutrient needs and nutrient content of your plant. The ones that are higher up are nascent leaves and may have a higher or elevated level of nutrients, and those that are lower are thought to be perhaps senescing. And I did want to point out that I conduct my research in the Columbia Basin. It's in eastern Oregon. The Columbia Basin is most of eastern Oregon and eastern Washington. And in our region, we have extremely sandy soils, and we grow crops under center pivot irrigation. So potatoes in our area have been found to use up to 560 kilograms of potassium per hectare. And at the peak of the growing season, they're taking up 15.5 kilograms per hectare per day. So it's quite a bit of potassium that potatoes can use in our area to maximize yields. These are the current petiole nitrate recommendations. This is for the Russet Burbank variety, which is what I use in my research. And you can see that there are four dates throughout the growing season, and it's shown against petiole nitrate N as a percentage of biomass. So I showed a picture of a petiole earlier. What a grower would do to assess the mid-season nutrient needs of the plant would be to go into the season, into the field, collect petioles, send them to the lab and compare them against an extension recommendation like this. So if your petioles are within this range of what's considered acceptable, you would likely not fertilize, but if you were below this range, you would likely apply nitrogen. Some research has shown that there's a competition between chloride and nitrate in the petiole, and that elevated levels of chloride in the petiole can depress nitrate N levels. I mentioned the very high potassium needs of potatoes in the area, and potassium chloride is a very commonly applied form of potassium fertilizer. So we speculated that if we looked at the relationship between chloride and nitrate in the petiole, we might actually shift the recommendation line down. So you can imagine that there would be two dotted lines on either side of this red line. To not clutter the slide, I didn't add them, but we thought that it was likely that a new range of what was considered an acceptable nitrate N recommendation would shift down if a grower had applied potassium chloride throughout the growing season. So our objectives were really to better understand the relationship between nitrate and chloride uptake in potato plants, and specifically their impact in petioles, and also to study the effects of different potassium fertilizer sources, rates, and timings on the nutrient content in plant matter. These are the treatments that I've used. They're all in kilograms per hectare. So I applied potassium chloride, SOP, and KMAG. Those are the terms I'll be using throughout this talk. You can see the chemical composition here and then the makeup of the fertilizer. Put them out at three dates throughout the planting season. One was 7 months pre-plant in mid-September, one at the end of March, just 2 weeks pre-plant, and then one in mid-May, which is considered sort of the last bypass over the field, so before row closure, before the potatoes grow high enough and close their canopy. And you can see the rates in the boxes, and they were all broadcast applied. Planted Russet Burbank using a randomized complete block design with five replications, four row plots, which were 9.14 meters long, and all plots were fertigated equally with 386 kilograms of nitrogen. So the only treatments in this experiment were the potassium applications. And I also want to point out that while potatoes do have a high potassium need in our area, and growers are applying quite a bit of potassium to maximize yield, the soil test values on my control plots, the plots where I applied no potassium fertilizer, had a soil test value of 300 parts per million, which for an extension recommendation in our region is sufficient potassium. I point this out because really in this experiment we're looking at the anion effect in the plant and not the effect of different potassium rates. This is a beautiful aerial shot of my field. In yellow, you can see what I estimate one plot to be. Going around here are the pivot tracks. And then these are my spray rows. And the field is blocked going along the pivot track. This is the data that I'll be presenting today. This is all collected this past summer in 2014. Mid to end of June, during tuber initiation, I collected both soil samples and the petioles that I'll be presenting now. In early August, I collected the above ground plant material, which I showed the image of earlier in the presentation, which are the tops. And then at the end of August is when I harvested the potatoes, and I used subsampling of my harvested potatoes to do a below ground tuber analysis. So to jump into my results, this is yield by potassium source. There are no significant differences in yield. Again, K wasn't really a limiting factor in this experiment, as even the control plots had sufficient potassium. These are in megagrams per hectare of USDA grade number one potatoes. As you can imagine, a number one potato is what you want. This is another yield graph. It's plotted by rate. And again, it's in megagrams per hectare of number one. Again, no significant differences. All rates from the 0 to the 373 kilograms per hectare yielded between 40 and 50 megagrams per hectare. Okay, so in this graph, we're looking at soil chloride in parts per million plotted against total chloride as a percent of plant matter. Here in blue, we have the tops, and here in red are the tubers. You can see the p-values are both very significant, and there's pretty low variability in this data, indicating that as there is increased chloride in a soil test value, there is also increased chloride as a percent of total tuber plant material. And this, there's a little bit more variability in the data, but still a correlation between soil chloride and the percentage of chloride as a percentage of total above ground plant material. However, when we look at the relationship between percent chloride of total plant material plotted against the percent nitrogen of total plant material, we see that for tubers, there's no significant relationship. So even though previous research had shown that there was a depression in petiole nitrate N with elevated levels of chloride, I saw that there was actually no relationship between total nitrogen in the plants and chloride. In tops, there is a significant p-value, but the R-squared value is very small, indicating that there was quite a bit of variability in the data. So while the slope of the line is different than zero, significantly different than zero, the data is pretty variable. This is looking at chloride uptake in kilograms per hectare plotted against percent chloride as a percentage of petiole chloride. And again, a highly significant p-value. So the R-squared is still, you know, it's not very high here, but it does give some indication that percent chloride in the petiole can give an indication of how much chloride the plant is taking up throughout the growing season. And this is chloride uptake based on biomass, the biomass from the tops that I collected. So this is not for the tubers. When we look at petiole chloride versus petiole nitrate, what was interesting was that although in previous studies there had been a strong correlation found, I did not see depressed levels of nitrate N in the petiole based on elevated levels of chloride in the petiole. So again, there is a significant p-value here of 0.007, but the R-squared is incredibly small, indicating a lot of variability in the data. I'll show some graphs after this to demonstrate this a little bit more, but I was expecting to see more of a sort of an overlapping line, chloride increases and nitrate depresses, and I just saw so much variability in the data that didn't indicate to me that what we had hypothesized was actually what was happening. For example, here we're looking at K rate in kilograms per hectare. We see September, March, and May, and then the rates of application, and it's plotted against nitrate N as a percentage of total petiole. So if you'll recall, this is what a grower would look at when they were doing a mid-season nutrient analysis. Also remember that the plots all got uniform levels of nitrogen and uniform nitrogen fertigation throughout the growing season. And we can see there really are no significant differences whether or not the potassium chloride was applied early in the season or just a couple weeks pre-plant or even mid-season. Nitrate levels are flat for all KCL rates. And I want to point out that in this graph we're only looking at potassium chloride rates, which is a subset of the treatments. Here, however, we see that as a percentage of total petioles, percent chloride, there are significant differences. So it's not that the chloride wasn't there to compete with the nitrate. It was. We didn't have that competition that we were expecting for levels. In September, there was significantly less. The September application had significantly less percent chloride of the petioles. So what I speculate is that we applied the potassium chloride 7 months before planting to a sandy, highly irrigated, well-drained soil. A lot of the chloride leached out before the plants were able to take it up. Those that were applied later in the growing season did not have significantly different levels of potassium chloride, but again, we didn't see any competition with nitrate in petioles. So in summary, we saw low impacts of potassium treatments on potassium K levels. That was to be expected as there were high soil K levels in the field to begin with. And no treatments were deficient in petiole K values. I did find that chloride concentration in the plant material was affected by the timing of the potassium chloride application. So I showed the petiole data, but for all of the plant material data, tops and also tubers, as well as soil test values, there is definitely effective timing of potassium chloride on chloride concentration. And as I mentioned, the petiole nitrogen was not strongly impacted by petiole levels. So what that would indicate to me is that the current nitrate and petiole recommendations for fertilization can continue to be used with confidence. And also that significantly higher chloride levels in soils, tops, tubers, and petioles with potassium chloride treatment. So where we applied potassium to the soil, we found potassium in our field. With that, I'd like to thank the primary PI on this project, Don Hornick, who passed away about a month ago and who is very missed. Also, Dan Sullivan, Phil Hom, Lyndon Porter, all the staff at the Agricultural Research Station where I do my research, and USDA, NEFA, and Compass Minerals for funding. And I'll take questions. Yes. Yes. In the interest of time, I didn't show the specific gravity data. I found slightly significant differences between the potassium sources and potassium rates. Definitely the potassium chloride did have depressed specific gravities, but the statistical differences were pretty significant for this growing season. Last year, the differences were a little bit more stark, and I also saw the specific gravity depressed by increased potassium chloride rates as opposed to lower rates.